Looking for a creative way to fund your next trip to Latin America? Travelers on Grabber can earn more than $200 by delivering U.S. products to shoppers in Latin America. And that's just the delivery rewards. You buy the products for the shoppers, so you'll also earn points on your credit card and get reimbursed after delivery. Check out our show notes for a link to Grabber or go to grabr.io. Thank you to Grabber for partnering with this episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. One of my travel nightmares these days is losing the piece of paper with my PCR or rapid test results when I'm in transit. Luckily, App in the Air is a free app that lets me upload all of my vaccine and test information into the Health Passport section of the app. After uploading, the Health Passport even generates a QR code that can be scanned when entering a new country, just like if you had the printed copy. Check out the app for free using the link in the show notes and get 20% off of your next flight when you book directly through App in the Air by using the code GeoBreeze at checkout. Thank you to App in the Air for partnering with this episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipino-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking.
You either have to book really far in advance as soon as like an airline opens up their availability, or like tomorrow, you know. That happened with me actually with a Lufthansa first class. So I did that last month with my parents. And that was always my plan, right? So I was going to take my parents to Europe and I wanted to come back on Lufthansa first class. And, you know, they from what I've read, you know, they released their seats 2 weeks prior to the actual flight. So I needed to book like a backup flight. Want to make sure we can get back home. So I booked a return in Lufthansa business class. But I always kept like checking, you know. And so once we're ready in our trip, like every day I was checking. And I actually got a subscription to Expert Flyer. And I set alerts. I never used it, so I was like trying it out too. I said, you know, there's, you know, three seats on this day, on this route. Send me an email. And maybe like 3 days before flight, space opened up. And then I told my parents, I'm like, sorry, I have to do this. Like, you're going to stay in business class, but we'll be on the same plane or whatever. So I had transferred enough points to Air Canada for first class for all three of us, just in case.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Miguel Rueda of Travel Sergeant. Miguel just started learning about points and miles during the pandemic. And now he has accumulated more than 1 million points in about 18 months. And he's already flown on some bucket list airline products like Q-Suites, Lufthansa First Class, and ANA First Class. In this episode, Miguel and I talk about one of his first luxury points redemptions, which was flying Q-Suites to Uganda, and his incredible experience with visiting the Uganda National Parks to see gorillas. We also discuss some tips for how to book hotels, rental cars, and excursions while traveling to Uganda. If you are interested in earning 1 million points or more in a short time, one of the best ways to earn points quickly is by adding business credit cards into your wallet. And qualifying for business credit cards is easier than most people think. One of my favorites is the Chase Inc. Business Cash Card, which has no annual fee, a high intro bonus, and lets you earn 5x points on internet, phone, cable, and office supply stores. That means you can pick up gift cards to pretty much any store you shop at from Staples and get 5x points that way. If you're interested in signing up for the Chase Inc. Business Cash Card, make sure you use a friend or creator's referral links. And if you're interested in supporting this show when you open your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards, which is linked for you in the show notes. And now, on with the show. Hey, Miguel, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for having me here.
Of course. I'm so excited to have you here and hear about your amazing trip that you got to take to Uganda on Q-Suites, which is crazy. I don't know if I've ever heard of somebody doing that route before. But before we get into all of that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into the game of points and miles?
Yeah, so I actually got into this because of work. So I used to travel a lot for work. I do internal audit for the federal government. And I was on a work trip with my manager and we were at the airport in Venice. And he's like, he invited me into to a lounge. He used his priority pass. He had the Sapphire Reserve. And I was like, what is this? Like, how can I get in here, you know, when I'm not traveling with my manager? So that's how I started researching, I guess, about which cards would give me lounge access. I really wanted that. And I kind of settled on two, which was the Chase Sapphire Reserve and the Amex Platinum. And I looked into those two, and I knew. So at the time, I was living in Germany. So I lived in Germany for 3 years working for the government. And I knew I'd be moving back eventually to El Paso. And, you know, I read that Priority Pass, the network wasn't as nice for domestic flights in the U.S. So that's when I looked into, okay, well, maybe I need to the Amex Platinum for the Centurion Lounge access. So that's what I settled on. And that's kind of how I started researching and learning more about the perks that come with these cards, as well as, you know, earning points for and redeeming for flights and all that.
Awesome. What were some of the first cards that you got?
So I guess the first card that I got, it was before this, you know, it was the Chase Sapphire Preferred. And I didn't get it, you know, for the points or anything. I just needed a card with, you know, foreign transaction fees because I was living overseas. And, you know, that was the first card that I got, but that was before, you know, I didn't really look too much into it when I was wanting lounge access. I'm like, oh man, I should have gone for the Reserve instead of this Preferred. So after that, I guess my second card was the Amex Platinum card. And then after that, it was just, you know, what you call shiny card syndrome. I just started applying left and right. And, you know, a lot of them I applied when they were, you know, lower or the normal sign-up bonuses, not what we've seen, you know, this past year where everybody went crazy with, you know, record high offers. So a lot of them I was like, man, I should have waited. Like, I got in a little too early, but there's always something else coming out. So no harm there.
Did you run into any problems early on when you were applying to cards left and right, or did you kind of have some idea of what you wanted to do with these cards points?
No, I haven't had a lot of, I guess, denials. You know, I did a lot of research after, you know, the initial Sapphire Preferred that I didn't really look into before that one. But after that, you know, I did a lot of research on Reddit, on the award travel and churning subreddits. And there's a very nice flow chart. You know, I don't know if it's been updated anymore, but, you know, it kind of tells you, you know, it starts out with, do you want cash back or travel? Okay, then go down this way. And then, you know, are you under 524 and all this other stuff? And, you know, it kind of tells you like to prioritize which cards, you know, start out with Chase. That's something I didn't really do, but I was able to work my way back down and, you know, kind of have a strategy moving forward to where I'll always be under 524 from now on. That's where the business cards come into play, right? And, you know, having those, the business cards doesn't affect the 524. So, yeah.
What business do you write on the applications for when you're applying for business cards?
So I started, I guess I have four business cards, and I started with real estate. So I was living overseas. So I was renting out a couple of homes back here in Texas. So that's what I put down, you know, real estate as the category. And, you know, I was using it minimally. I mean, there wasn't a lot of expenses, but anything that I needed to, materials or anything to replace a window or stuff like that, I used those cards. But, you know, I also used it for personal stuff to meet the spend initially.
So once you got your first round of points, what was one of the first redemptions that you got to do?
So this was before I knew more of the ins and outs. And so my first points redemption was just a United Economy flight back to Texas from Germany. And, you know, I was coming maybe two or three times a year. And I was like, well, this is nice. You know, I don't have to buy my flight to go home. But, you know, it was one of my, I would say, mistakes, because I didn't know the whole point valuation and why would I use those points on that if I could have gotten more bang for my buck, because I was getting like a government discount on the flight. So, you know, my flights, you know, they were only, you know, maybe $600-$700 round trip in economy using my government discount. And this was before the pandemic. So, you know, that's really low, or, you know, it was really low for that. So that was my big points redemption. The first one, I guess, you know, I transferred the Chase points to United and just a one way back home. But my first, I guess, you know, business class redemption that I did was American Airlines. I got that was my first business card too. I got the Barclays Aviator business card. And I think I got like 75,000 points from that one. And the rest of the points that I needed, I had because American is probably what I fly the most for work. So I had to, you know, miles from flying. And that's the one I went to Uganda from Frankfurt on Qatar Airways. So it was 110,000 American airline miles and about $170, $155, one of the two. So it was Frankfurt with a layover in Doha and then on to Entebbe in Uganda.
Very cool. So this was the big Uganda trip already. It was one of the first business class flights that you got to take.
Yes. And the reason why I settled on this, you know, was this was March of 2021, right? Yeah, so March of 2021. So there wasn't a lot of places we could travel to. So I made a list on a spreadsheet. I said, these are the countries that will let Americans, you know, go in. And then I was living in Germany, so I had to, you know, take those requirements into consideration. I didn't want to have to quarantine, you know, coming back. So I was like, okay, which countries does Germany not require me to quarantine if I travel to? And then, you know, which countries does my job let me travel to? So it was all these categories, all these conditions that I had to meet. And I just came down to two countries, which was Uganda and Rwanda. And, you know, before that, I'd never really looked at going there, like on top of my list. I had other places I wanted to go to, but I'm glad that I went. It was an amazing trip. I went for a week and, you know, I just rented a car and just drove around the country all week, going from national park to national park. Yes. I mean, it was quite an adventure.
Wait, so of all the countries in the world, the only two were Uganda and Rwanda, where you didn't have to quarantine to go there. You didn't have to quarantine in Germany once coming back from Uganda?
Right. So it was those three conditions, right? It was, do they let Americans in? And does Germany not require quarantine upon return from these countries? And then does my employer allow me to travel to that country, you know, based on the government travel restrictions and stuff? And so those were the two countries that I came up with. And, you know, the main thing to do in both of them that I found was like the gorilla trekking. And based on that, you know, Rwanda, I think, charges something like $1,400 or $1,500 for the permit. And Uganda was charging $600, but it was like on sale because of the pandemic. So it was like $450. So that's why I chose that one.
So what's the process of entering Uganda? Do you have visa paperwork to fill out? COVID paperwork to fill out? What's the paperwork process?
So as of last year, what I needed was, well, it was yellow fever. I think they still require that yellow fever vaccine. And then I think they do visa on arrival, but I didn't want to risk it. So I just did my visa application maybe 2-3 weeks prior. And it was $50, you know, through their website. And I had to email their consulate or embassy that they had in Germany. And I got that approved. So that's all they needed at the time. So
say again, how many points did this take in order to do the Q suites and what route did you do?
So it was 55,000 each way. So it was 110,000 and I think $155, if I'm not mistaken, total for round trip. So it's Frankfurt to Doha, which is about 6 hours, and then another 6 hours from Doha to Entebbe.
Did you stay at hotels while you were there, or what's the accommodations that you did?
So I did overseas. I really like using booking.com, and, you know, I just searched for all the lodging through them, and really, except maybe for one of them, I stayed, like, I would book the day of. I had no problem finding anything. Like, a lot of these places I stayed at, I was the only one there. You know, they hadn't seen tourists in weeks or months. I remember seeing like the, you know, sometimes they have like a logbook, you sign in, this is where I'm from and visiting. And I saw one, the first place I stayed at, and it was, you know, the last person that stayed there was like 2 months prior to that. So yeah, I didn't have a problem finding anything even the day of.
That's crazy. What is the price range that somebody can expect if they visited Uganda?
I was spending maybe like $40 a night. So, I mean, if I would have gone with somebody else, I went solo, by the way. You know, the lodging would have been the same cost for, you know, split both ways because it was, you know, double occupancy everywhere that I went, really.
That's crazy. that's a really good price. And I know a lot of people who listen to the show are like, oh, I never like paying for hotels. I always want to be doing it on points. But for $40, like, save your points for another day. That's an awesome hotel price to just pay cash for and earn some points on your Chase Sapphire. Or what card do you typically use to pay for hotels?
Well, typically, I guess my strategy now has shifted and I use whatever newest card I have because I'm trying to meet the spend requirement on that one. So I do have the Envoy Brilliant now. So if I'm staying with Mary, I'll use that one, which, by the way, I use your link to apply for.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. So tell us a little bit more about the Gorilla Trekking excursion. What does that involve? How do you get this set up? What do you do?
Yeah, so there's a lot of, you know, if you Google it, you know, there'll be no shortage of tour companies offering all this stuff, but I did everything myself. Like, so the car I rented, it's through a self-drive Uganda. So I got a little RAV4 because it was just me, and it was about $50 a day. So that was one of my biggest expenses. And the Gorilla Trekking is the other, you know, I guess more expensive thing. I think now they might have gone back up to $600 or $700 for the permit. That's directly with the Uganda Wildlife Authority. So that's like the government organization that runs the parks, the national parks. And so if you book it through a, you know, tour company, they're going to charge you, you know, their fee to do that. But honestly, you know, I saw people that went with tour companies and their tour guide doesn't even accompany them on the actual gorilla trek, because then they'd have to pay the same, you know, to go in with us.
So then there's just people walking up to gorillas with no guide?
No. So the Uganda Wildlife Authority, or the UWA, as they call it, they have, you know, park rangers and trackers, and they're the ones that take you out there when you pay for your permit fee. But I'm saying if you go through a private tour company, they're going to charge you whatever it is for this gorilla trekking, but they're not the ones going. They're just going to drive you there. And then sometimes that price of the permit's not even included. You'll have to pay that separately to the government, right, for the permit. But, you know, you could just do it yourself. I just drove to, it's called Bwindi Impenetrable Forest. And there's two or three gates, and you just pay for your permit there. So pre-pandemic, you would have to do this, you know, months in advance because it would sell out. But I mean, I went and got a permit for the next day. And then in the morning you show up, and then, you know, the main guide will kind of brief you. This is what you do. You know, if you get scared, don't run. They said, if you see us run, then you run. But then before, maybe 2 or 3 hours before the group goes out, they send trackers out there to look for them. So they're looking for, you know, disturbed, you know, earth or whatever, following their tracks. And then they radio in and tell us the way to go. It could take you anywhere from an hour to maybe 4 or 5 hours to find them. Because, you know, they're just, you know, they go wherever they want. And you could get lucky. The groups, they do 8 people. And then you have an hour max to spend with the gorilla family that you're tracking.
So you get to walk up and interact with them?
Yeah, so they tell you to stay about, you know, 6 feet away or whatever. But if they come near you, then obviously you can be closer. And the funny thing is, like, at the time, they, you know, they weren't really enforcing masks, I guess, in the country. But when you were with the gorilla group, you did have to wear your mask. Because, you know, we share 98% of the DNA, so we can transmit diseases to them. So they really take care of the animals there.
That's incredible. So how many gorillas did you see?
Our group, I think 19. I mean, I didn't, you know, count them all to see if all 19 were there, but we saw like the alpha, the dominant male, and, you know, we saw babies and moms and stuff carrying the babies and climbing trees. It was, I mean, I got pretty close to one of them, or, you know, they got pretty close to our group. They just walked right in front of me. Maybe like I could have reached out and touched it, but I didn't want to do that. But yeah, it was one of those bucket list type of things, you know, that I didn't know I wanted to do till I said, oh, this is possible, you know, like I could do this.
That's insane. Did you see any other animals while you were out there, or is it mostly just gorillas in that area that you're going to find?
So at that park, you're really looking at the gorillas. I think they have something like 60 to 80% of all the mountain gorillas in Uganda. So that's like really the only place they thrive. But I went to other parks. I went to Queen Elizabeth National Park. So that is, you know, I saw a lot of, the only thing I didn't see was lions that I wanted to see. But there's elephants and hippos and water buffaloes and, you know, crocodiles in the river and antelope. And one of the ones I liked the most was the, warthogs, you know, because of the Lion King. So my guide was like, so I went to Queen Elizabeth National Park and I hired a guide. I think it was $20 or $40 a day. And he was laughing. He's like, why do you like those? Like, those are dumb animals. Like, because they said they're not very intelligent. That's why. But that was one of, you know, the animals I got excited a lot every time I would see him. But I saw giraffes. So I saw those at Lake Mbuto National Park. And there, actually, I did use points. Or not points, but a travel credit. At the time, I was going to be coming up on my first year for my Amex Platinum. And I didn't know if I was going to renew it. You know, if I didn't get a retention offer, my plan was to cancel it and then get it again, but like either the Morgan Stanley or the Charles Schwab version to get a bonus again. So there was a $200 hotel credit, right? Or travel credit, they called. And so I said, you know, I might as well use it just in case I don't renew. So I paid for a lodge inside the national park. It was about $200 a night. So I think I might have paid like $8 out of pocket at this other park. And I was the only person there, you know, the whole time. But it was nice because coming out of my room and, you know, there's zebras out there. There's hippos just walking outside the lodge there. So that was nice.
So a lot of these hotels are kind of off the beaten path because they're right near the national parks, right? So you're already in the park when you're in this hotel?
It's literally inside the national park grounds. Like, you have to go through the gate with the, you know, wildlife authority opening the gate, making sure you're either have your permit to go to into the park for the day or, you know, you're a guest there.
Do all of these hotels just have on-site restaurants, or do you normally go into town or somewhere else when you're looking to get lunch and dinner?
Like, the first place I stayed at, you know, they told me, hey, you want this or this for dinner? And then they go into town and get the ingredients and cook it for you. So that one inside the park, they had a restaurant too, but, you know, I mean, they had like, they actually had a menu and stuff and a bar, but there's nobody else there.
And then when you flew back, same route, Uganda to Doha, back to Germany.
Yeah. And so they had the nicer, you know, I'm not a app geek or anything. I really can't tell the difference between a Boeing and an Airbus or any of that. Not yet, but they had the nicer plane with the Q suites from Frankfurt to Doha. But even though it was kind of like the same distance from Doha to Entebbe, they had like an older product. They didn't have the nice Q suites with the doors and all that, but I mean, it was still nice.
Yeah. Tell us about the difference between the two routes. Like, what's the difference in menu, as well as can you elaborate a little bit more on the seating situation?
So, yeah, I guess they just have the newer planes from Frankfurt to Doha. And, you know, they have the Q seats where you can close the door and have all their privacy. And they had, you know, they gave me pajamas and amenity kit and all that stuff. And even though the other segment from Doha to Entebbe was pretty much the same distance, you know, they were both about 6 hours. They had an older, you know, business class where you don't have as much privacy. I didn't get pajamas there was an amenity kit, but it wasn't as nice, you know.
What was in the nicer amenity kit?
I guess it was just a nicer bag, you know, and like more stuff in it. But you have the, you know, socks and toothbrush, toothpaste, all the moisturizers and stuff that I don't use. But I guess that's one of the only things I collect, like the amenity bags. Like, I just empty them out because I don't need the stuff inside, but I like to keep the bags now. So
do they give you a bag on the Doha to Entebbe route?
No, you didn't get a bag.
There's no amenity kit, not even like a paper bag with some.
Yeah, there might have been something small, just like a toothbrush and, you know, maybe like three things, but not. I mean, I don't have a bag from them, so.
So what's the next trip that you have planned on points?
So the next one's actually, it's not going to make sense to a lot of people maybe, but because I have no reason to leave, but I'll be gone from my house for 2 days. I'm actually going to go to L.A., just to go to New York, but with a layover in Tokyo. So we can't go into Japan yet, but you can transit through there. So I just wanted to fly ANA, the new ANA first class. So I found a way to do it. There's this guy I found, you know, I saw a reel on Instagram of like 2021 highlight. And I was like, oh, and then I saw the ANA stuff and I started asking him about it. And he told me, like, yeah, you can transit through there. I was like, what? So I was like, I need to do this too. So that's just something that I guess I've been wanting to do. And, you know, maybe once Japan opens up for tourism again, it's going to be a lot harder to get. So I said, okay, I'm going to just go fly it just to fly it.
If you are listening to this episode thinking, I wish I could travel like this, but I don't know where to start, I offer free credit card consultations by email at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. Additionally, I host a masterclass and group coaching session each month. You can find the links to sign up for the consultations, monthly masterclasses, and Patreon, which gets you access to the masterclasses and also recordings of all past events, in the show notes. This week's Patreon shout-out goes out to Andrew. Thank you so much for being a part of the GeoBreeze Travel Patreon community.
So you're flying ANA first class from Los Angeles to Tokyo, then Tokyo to New York.
Yes. Yeah. So this guy, he actually suggested a route. He's like, well, if you do this, because you can't leave the airport either, right? And I think at one of the airports, you can't even stay overnight. So he's like, if you do this route, you know, you'll be there for 5 hours. And so I looked and it was hard to find something that coincided with both segments, right? But I like to do that stuff every day, just plan flights that I'll never take, you know, a lot of times. But, you know, I found one that worked going out from LA to Haneda and then about 5 hour layover and then to JFK. So the JFK route is like the new first class, which they call the suite. And the LA route has like the older first square, I think they call it, which is the older one, but it's still first class. So I guess I'll try to compare the two, you know. And I'll be back home in 2 days and for no reason other than to fly ANA.
Yeah, this first class flight normally is how much? If you boarding cash, 10,000 one way?
About 20,000.
One way?
No, ground trip.
Okay.
So, yeah, I looked it up. You know, I always try to compare it. And, you know, obviously one way is always a little bit more expensive. When you do round trip, it's almost the same, a little bit more. But I did look up the specific route because it kind of counts as a round trip. You know, it's an open jaw coming back from Japan. I think it was about $22,000, you know, which obviously if I had that, I'd never pay that. But, you know, there's a way to have these experiences without paying what other people pay.
How many points did this cost?
So this one was 115,000 American Express points that I transferred to Virgin Atlantic and $270 in taxes. So, and I kind of like wish I could have booked this last month because there was a transfer bonus, 30%. So it could have been less than that. Now that I know about transfer bonuses, it's hard for me to transfer without a bonus because I'm like, man, like maybe I should wait, you know. But for this one specifically, even the 115,000 points for a round trip on ANA first class, I think is a great deal. So I didn't think about it twice. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it. So
why did you decide to go with Virgin Atlantic rather than transferring directly through ANA?
I guess it's one of the sweet spots that they have, being able to book ANA with Virgin Atlantic points. And I guess it took less points. I don't remember how many ANA was asking for. I think it's probably close. I think they do 120 maybe. But Virgin Atlantic from the West Coast, you save like 10,000 points, right? So, you know, half of it is from the West Coast. So I saved a little bit of points there.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if it was either cheaper or for some reason having better availability on Virgin's site rather than ANA's own site, which is always weird if that ever happens. But
no, I think ANA has better availability. Honestly, I didn't even look for this route that way. I just went the Virgin Atlantic route. And I guess that's something that was new this past year, where before you would have to do round trip booking ANA with Virgin Atlantic, but you can now do one way. So I guess the other good thing that I was able to do, because, you know, so this one you have to book over the phone. But I was done with that call in 15 minutes, so it wasn't bad at all. And what they were able to do is put it on the same, you know, itinerary, same confirmation number, PNR. That way, I think I'll have less trouble, you know, trying to tell them, no, I'm not going to Japan. I'm just, you know, transiting through there because my end destination is New York. So I'll have to just comply with whatever New York's travel requirements are. So we'll see how that goes.
When you were looking for a ward space on this, was there a lot? And how far out did you have to book this?
No, there wasn't. I saw maybe 2 days a month for the next, you know, 2-3 months that had availability. And I was just trying to make it work, either New York to LA or LA to New York. Or I had to do New York because that's where the new one was, the new product. But, you know, I guess I've seen that you either have to book really far in advance as soon as like an airline opens up their availability, or like tomorrow, you know. That happened with me actually with a Lufthansa first class. So I did that last month with my parents. I think it was like the day before, you know, 2 more seats opened up. So I was able to change my parents' business class seats into my flight. So then we switched. Instead of going to Denver, we went to Chicago because that's where they fly the first class, not to Denver. But yeah, I did that, I guess. So I brought that up because, you know, I wasn't able to do it until the day prior. That's when the seats opened up for that one. And, you know, I guess that's not really heard of, 3 seats in first class on Lufthansa. So that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, if you want to grab these first class availabilities, you either have to book really far out or really close to the day that you're flying. If you're looking and it's like 6 months out, 5 months out, there's almost no hope sometimes to try to find a ward availability, which is unfortunate because I think that's about the amount of time most people give themselves to plan vacations is 6 months out. And by then you're kind of lost. You have to do this as soon as calendars open up. So maybe 10 or 11 months, or you're down to the wire at 6 weeks, or not 6 weeks, 2 days. I know that ANA is one of the greatest sweet spots in the world of award travel because you're saving $20,000 and only having to spend 110, 115,000 points. And you mentioned that it only took 15 minutes on the phone call. So did you just look all this up online, write down the flights you wanted to take, call and say, hey, I got my points?
Yeah. So I found, you know, where I saw availability, and I used the United's website to find that. And the computer is always better than the phone because you can do like a calendar search. You know, you could say you could see 30 days out and where, you know, you have availability for what you're looking for. And then I just write down the, you know, the flight number, you know, departure, destination. And then I called and I said, you know, I want to fly this and these are my flight numbers. And they confirmed they're still available and tell me how many points it is and, you know, how much it costs. And if I want it, they book it. Actually, I transferred the points, you know, while I was on the phone with them. I think they can hold them for a couple of days, if I'm not mistaken. But I was able to just log into my American Express account and transfer the points. And then he saw them and booked it.
Because it transfers instantly to Virgin Atlantic. Yeah. Right. Or yeah.
A couple minutes maybe. Yeah.
But then for ANA, if you had transferred to that route, it would take 3 days. So that's another reason to go with Virgin instead of ANA for that too. Because if you do have to transfer to ANA, which I've done in the past, then you transfer your points and then you just pray for 3 days that your award availability doesn't disappear. And when you're working with ANA first class, that award availability will disappear.
Yeah, that's why I just went for it. You know, I'm supposed to take my daughter to Japan. Well, supposed to, like, you know, not in 2020, but then we were supposed to go again for Thanksgiving. I had found like this super cheap tickets that a bunch of people took advantage of. I think we paid like almost $1,400 round trip for 6 people. I have 4 kids, you know, in economy. So I was round trip from Phoenix. And so I would have had to, you know, find my way to and from Phoenix as well. But, you know, they came out to what, less than $250 each. And, you know, we had to cancel that because they're not letting people in. So I've been wanting to go to Japan. And even though this is technically, I won't count as it's a new country because I'll just be in the airport. But I know that next time we go, I don't have to worry about, oh, I really want ANA first class because I've already flown it. You know, I'll be able to more comfortably, you know, fly something else.
Yeah. Makes sense. So with all of these cool products you've gotten to try and all of these different routes, what's the best piece of travel hacking advice you've come across so far?
Advice? I don't know. I mean, just do it. Just go for it. You know, like, don't wait on other people to go. You know, like, I'm fortunate that my wife's like okay with me sometimes going on solo trips, you know, because she understands that it's like my hobby and, you know, what I like to do. So, you know, like me leaving for a couple of days next month to transit through Japan for 5 hours. I mean, it's not that much different from someone going on a weekend hunting trip or, you know, bowling tournament somewhere. It's just, so, you know, I'm glad she lets me, you know, go on solo trips. And so I don't have to wait on, you know, when can she travel? When, you know, who's going to take care of the kids and all this? So that's why, you know, I'm okay with solo trips because, like, I'm going for the experience, you know. Yeah, I'd rather share that with someone if they want to come, but I'm okay going alone. So just go.
Were the kids super jealous that they did not get to see the gorillas?
Yeah. My oldest, she's a teenager, and, you know, I told her, I was like, hey, let's go. And she's like, no, I don't know. Like, I have this homework and it was spring break. So, but she, you know, she said she had all this stuff to catch up, and I'm like, you know, fine, whatever. And, you know, and when I came back, and she's like, yeah, I should have gone.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time.
Yeah. So, but she would have gone, you know, I would have flown economy. So it was not that bad.
Nice. So can you give a shout out to somebody else on the internet that people should go to for points advice as well?
Yeah, so actually he's on Instagram, but his content's on YouTube. So there's this guy that I like on YouTube. His name's Mark Plymail. So Mark with a K, Plymale. And that's also his Instagram. But he has a link to his YouTube channel there. But so he really does a lot more of, like, you know, credit card analysis and, you know, how much the points are worth and more about earning points and the benefits that come with cards. So, you know, that's the first half of this travel hacking, right? It's earning the points. And then the other half to me is finding the space and booking it. But I really like some of the analysis that he does on YouTube, like that nobody else really does. So that's one person. And I guess I'd like to give a shout out to the guy that gave me the idea for this Tokyo Transit ANA First Class. So it's Oli Travel Geek, Oli Travel Geek on Instagram. So yeah, there's a couple people there.
Awesome. And where can we find you on the internet?
So my Instagram is Travel Sergeant. And I guess that's the same name for YouTube. I'm very behind on YouTube. I've been trying to do, you know, travel vlogs pretty much, but I think I need to start doing a lot more of explaining, you know, how to earn and spend points as well. Cause I've been getting a lot of DMs on Instagram lately, you know, asking me, and it's hard, you know, to go back and write the same thing to everybody. So I'm like, you know what? I need to just make a video explaining some of the stuff and pointing them in that direction. I always mention you and Max, you know, it's like, hey, like, these people have some good, you know, it's a good place to go start. So really like your account and Max's account. I mean, he's amazing with with his videos now, you know, Max Miles Points.
Oh yeah, Max produces such high production quality videos. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Miguel, for coming onto the show, telling us about your Q Suite experience and Uganda, your ANA plans, and your Lufthansa. So many cool products that you've gotten to try. So thank you so much for coming onto the show and telling us all about these.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Julie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!